step inside the ghoul gate, for tonight we pray. Altered Beast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Main Quest Podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that takes their girlfriend on a date during a full moon with the knowledge that he, himself, is a werewolf. And then we go dancing with the dead for like 5 minutes. It's a thriller reference, kids. As always, I am your host, Keith. If you are new to the show, you can find the podcast pretty much everywhere on the internet, but if you like other content specific to this very show, make sure to catch it on Instagram. Just search The Main Quest, and you can check out what's coming up on the show, and I'm on Twitter as well, @_MainQuest. And of course, welcome to the third annual Ghoulcade. But wait, Keith! What the hell? It's December! You're ruining my Christmas, my Hanukkah, it's all fucked up now. What's going on? It's December. Well, not only did my hiatus push things back, there was also some scheduling conflicts that I had when I was recording the Game Boy episodes. So this is going to be the officially and probably the only ho-ho horror edition of the Ghoulcade here at the Main Quest Podcast. And, you know, mainly, I mean, whatever. I believe the holidays are completely overrated, as they are, and, you know, sometimes this stuff can be incredibly detrimental to some people's mental health. So, yeah, fuck the holidays. Let's talk about murder, or I guess in this episode's case, bestiality. Speaking of fucking beasts, and not beast fucking, those are two different separate things, I have a guest with me today. He has successfully cut down Silent Hill 2. Runs his own D&D campaigns, and is far more eloquent than I could ever wish to be. So honestly, I mean, who's the real beast here? I would like to welcome Phil from Deleted Saves.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it, man. Glad to be on.
I'm glad to have you on, man. Sorry about the bestiality segue. That's the only way that was going to work.
That is probably the that's the most interesting intro I think I've had so far. Back in my day, we just have to worry about cow tipping, not cow tiddling.
I mean, it wouldn't be a Main Quest intro without something uncomfortable and disgusting.
Well, I'm just disgusting and uncomfortable is my middle name, of course. Well, both my middle names.
So for people that don't know you, I believe your show is actually pretty interesting. And I think a lot of people who listen to my show will also definitely gravitate to what you're doing. Because of one thing. Well, many things, actually, probably now that I think about it. But it's, you know, for one, it's incredibly well-written, incredibly well-spoken. But the one thing that sticks out to me that I actually didn't realize you were doing until you were on another podcast is that you are covering the video games you talk about chronologically, just like I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What made you want to start a podcast and start doing that?
Well, in my case, the idea behind the podcast actually came from a failed attempt to be a streamer. I got a PC for, you know, big games, actually computer gaming. And I figured, well, you know, I've kind of been wanting to share my love of games with the internet, like, you know, many other people do. So I tried streaming. I loaded up my computer. I was originally going to start streaming Skyrim. And I loaded it up. I had, you know, all the mods installed. Everything was tested, ready to go. I loaded it up. I got OBS. I got everything running. I got a Twitch account, all this fun stuff. And I started one day to stream. And I had my headset plugged into my computer port, and I'm going. And I did a quick intro, and I'm sitting here. I have, you know, the game pad, PC in front of me, everything like that. And I stopped myself about 30 seconds in, or about a minute or so in, and I went, let me just play that back. So I halted what I was doing, played it back, and it is just the game audio. It's dead silence. And I fussed around for a bit, and I finally figured out that the PC that I had just gotten as a gift, the microphone port doesn't work. So I cannot be a streamer who speaks. So I went, shit, here we go. So, but at this point, and this was, you know, just before the, you know, the pandemic had started, a couple buddies of mine and I had started together to, you know, sort of podcast a little bit on the concept of like D&D, playing D&T. We thought we're going to do like a D&D live play game. And then the pandemic hit and we couldn't really do that. And that kind of fell by the wayside. But somewhere in about mid-2021, I said, well, wait a second. I still have this set up, the equipment. I can still record a podcast. Why don't I just start talking about games, which I've been playing now for most of my life. But, and I did that, and it's been working successfully. It just, I wanted to go chronologically because in my head, that's how it still lives. I started in the, well, technically at the tail end of the Atari 2600. I like got a little copy of that from my dad, who had one. And then I go into the NES, the SNES, and chronologically all through there. Because in a lot of cases, the new system was purchased through the sale of the old system. So I no longer have those old systems and old games. I mean, you can emulate them now, and I'm all for emulation. It's just I haven't, you know, kind of really done that too much over the years. But I decided to do it chronologically because I wanted to get the old stuff out of my head first before I become too old and forget what happened and what
I did. Yeah, it's funny because I've been listening to your show, I think, since your Star Tropics episode.
Yes.
And once I heard that that's what you were doing and I realized it, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. He started with these very old games and now you're talking about like Xbox 360 stuff. And I'm like. Mm-hmm.
And I will eventually get up to like the PS4, PS5, but I'm doing them. And something is sometimes because of how I've played games over the years, I have done multiple systems like simultaneously, but I want to get them in a more cohesive chronological order. So there's reason when I'm going for the 360, I'm going to go into the PC realm because a lot of my heyday, I played around the time of the PS2, but I wanted to get the 360 in first because there was stuff I wanted to talk about and I sprinkled them in.
Do you have any history with the PC in the 90s?
Some, a little bit. It depends on the type of game. I have some experience with it, but not a whole lot of them stick out. In fact, the oldest game, I think, from PC that I've recorded was Dungeons & Dragons Stone Prophet. You know, the Ravenloft Stone Prophet game, which was from about 95. Because I played that one. That might be the oldest PC game I remember. Then it starts becoming a little later, like the late 90s. A lot of the early 90s PC stuff we had played was always like the King's Quest games, Heroes Quest, Carmen Sandiego, a lot of that stuff. So I don't really know where to fit that.
It's interesting because I have just a little bit of experience with PC gaming in the 90s, but not enough where I'm like, I don't know if I should cover this on the show. Mm-hmm. I have played PC games like sprinkled in there throughout my life up until now. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, the PC is such a persistent platform throughout decades that where do you exactly throw that kind of stuff into a podcast in which you are covering games in a chronological order, which I mean, I guess the simple answer is, well, just do it by release date, but I'm doing it on a console by console basis. So I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting and weird thing.
Yeah, that's why I say seasons very loosely on my show. Technically what I would call my third season, but again, it's more, I'm doing it like every so many episodes. I'm kind of like how we do American television, like generally 26, 30 episodes is considered a season. That's what I mean. Not that I have some overarching grand story. I'm just delineating where's a good spot to start. So what I've done up to this point is that if I was short a couple episodes for a season, I would grab a PC game and throw it in there. Like I did that for. And again, when I do my games, these are the games that stuck out to me for whatever reason, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, I would love to sit here and, you know, I'm sure people would love me to hear me talk about, you know, Gears of War, NBA Jam, and stuff like that. I just never played those. So sure. I have no background. I have nothing to say on that topic. But like I said, the first one I think I introduced was Nocturne from about 1999, which is a survival horror title that was PC only. Its real lasting fame is that one side character was later revamped into Blood Rain.
Okay.
So there's a character in that game. You play this individual known as the Stranger. He's literally wears gray hat, gray trench coat, everything. Takes place from about the early 1920s to about the 1940s through episodic events. And one of the early cast members you meet, because he's a government operative working under the FDR administration, is a half-vampire named Svetlana. Literally, she has long flowing robes, the outfit, the backwards blades on her hands, and she was a side character. He helped her out on one mission, and then he didn't see her much again. Well, the developers, to our reality, later, when Nocturne was supposed to get a sequel, because they sequel baited it, they left on a cliffhanger that has now, 20-some years on, never going to happen, they decided to take her character and do a total revamp, and they turned it into Blood Rain. And Blood Rain, as you know, had a lot more financial success.
Yeah.
Which pisses me off because I really enjoyed Nocturne. It was actually a very good game. Clunky as shit. If you ever tried to play Resident Evil on PC keyboard controls with mouse, that was always the game's biggest flaw, was trying to do that literally, every so many screenshots, the screen turns, the pre-rendered backgrounds. But the problem is I don't have a control pad. I'm stuck with the WASD keys in the mouse. That makes it very, very difficult to get through this game.
I have all of these thoughts in my head about any one game that I am playing. I cannot play a game. I cannot watch a movie without having some sort of something critical to say about it. I just can't. I can't turn that part of myself off. Mm-hmm. And so if I don't get it out, it just sits there in my head and I get annoyed. Right. Because who am I going to talk to about it? You know, that's one of the things why I also just do the show solo most of the time, is just so I can turn the mic on and just get it out and be done with it.
I totally
so it doesn't
agree.
Live in my head anymore.
I was self-raised on Mystery Science Theater 3000. So even if, whatever media I'm watching, even if it's something I really enjoy, there's a little part of me that has a guy in two robot puppets in my head going, just critiquing the entire way.
Yeah.
So when I come back to one of my own scripts, it's part of me going, all right. Plus, again, I was trained as an artist. I'm used to critique. I'm used to people telling me your work is shit. And here's why. I tended to go, okay, final exam time. Here we go. Here are my final set of thoughts. Here's the critique. Did I like it? Did I not like it? And here's why. In both cases, I do try to give a very good answer. As you said in your intro, I did dismantle Silent Hill 2. People were not happy that I did that. But I felt I had to, and that's why that was one of my first very long form podcasts, was because I had to give reasons why. Because of, and I've talked about this on a couple other shows, because of my personal history, there were things in that game, and I know, people can say, oh, that's woke, the woke mafia's coming. No, they're very triggering for me. And it was not a masterwork. It was me going, this is insulting, for the longest time. And people keep, I got that for a while. People going back, did you actually play the game? Yes, I did play the game. This is such a great, it's been to, no, it isn't. There's so many, if you're talking other psychological or survival horror games, there are many others that have outdone it. It's not a well-done game. The dialogue is awful. The recording is awful. But it also, in retrospect, seems it's by writers who are still new to the writing game. They got the chops to do it professionally, but they're young at it. And I don't mean they're chronologically young. I mean they're new to the game. They haven't really understood nuance. Not saying that I'm a master of that myself. I'm going to be very, very blunt. But even, as an experienced reader, you can sit back and go, this is coming off rather clunky. And if anyone else has gone through these sort of things, this is not cathartic. This is damaging. But
I'm, in Silent Hill 2's defense, and keep in mind, I have never played Silent Hill 2, so I actually don't know if this is the case. It could very well be the case, because localization is has famously been terrible up until, you know.
Yeah, and it is a PS2 title, so they're still under that bad umbrella of localization.
And also the Japanese have a very different culture where those type of things are kind of flippant to them. Not saying that they aren't serious to them, but it's not talked about in a very serious manner, I suppose, if that's what I want to say.
Oh, yeah. No, I can completely agree. And I do understand that it is a matter of approach. And a lot of the stuff, again, with me is conjecture and opinion. My opinion, and who am I really? But a lot of cases, it also, I found it, in, you know, the problematically is that media didn't come out and say, hey, we need an alternate opinion. What went wrong? A lot of it's like keeps getting backed up. It's now it's classic, greatest of all time, greatest of all time, greatest of all time. As I've said on my show many, many times, especially my more newer episodes, I kind of don't like the game media industry, like the big boys.
I'm with you.
Yeah, Polygon, Kotaku, Game Informer, all of them. Like, I know you have an agenda. I understand it's capitalism. This is how you get paid. I get it, but that doesn't mean you aren't shit. Doesn't mean you aren't a pile of assholes. It doesn't mean I'm not going to call you out. Because what are you really going to do to me? Have a different opinion? Write a hit piece? Go for it. You've done it.
It's like a, it's kind of like a boys club, you know?
It very
they
much is.
All seem to have, it's kind of like an echo chamber within the games media, which is like, yeah, they're all separate different publishers and they have all their own people writing for them, but they all know each other. You are a fool if you don't think they're not talking to each other.
Oh, exactly. So. Definitely. And it's like, you can see, and I'm not calling him out, Dan Reichert. His, you know, he was originally a Game Informer. That's actually where I knew him from. And, I remember years and years ago, he and the crew actually started doing Let's Plays, and they would have like a Christmas joke episode. And they did this one that was Siberia, but not a different type of Siberia. It was a much different one. It was this terrible survival horror game. Laughed their way through it. Riker got it. It was just like, can someone shut this man up for 5 seconds? Because he's just going on and on and on. Eventually, he leaves. He goes to Giant Bomb. You know, has a lot of success there. More power to him. Leaves to become a WWE like sort of commentator, and now he's back in a much more producive role. You don't get to have that kind of ability to bounce around in a sphere like that without knowing people, without being part of a boys club. And again, not calling him out or any singling him out. I'm just using him quite literally as an example. And there's been a lot of other people that have done it. And, you know, I can't say I'm not a little jealous. I'd love to be able to write about video games for a living.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a point at which I have to go, well, I realize that my thoughts on the matter are probably going to differ from what the machine wants and from whatever kind of money is coming in. You don't think places like Activision Blizzard, you don't think Microsoft, you don't think Sony, you don't think EA, don't give them a little kickback? Of course they bloody do. Even if it's not payola, it's good review scores, it's promotion, it's free merchandise, it's easier access to what they have coming up to keep the games rolling. Come on now.
Yeah, it's also one of those things, and I think you probably agree with me, is that I don't really care much for a lot of modern video games. It takes a lot for me to get excited or invested in a new game that is coming out.
Yeah.
And so I don't think a lot of those publishers or anything are going to come to people like us and give a shit what we have to say about Mega Man 2 or Wizards and Warriors or something
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. I mean, and again, nothing against the modern games. There's games out there for everyone.
Yeah.
Every time I see like the Horizon Zero Dawn or Horizon Forbidden West, I went, that's for somebody, but it's not for me.
I bought that game and played it for an hour, and I'm probably never going to pick it back up.
Yeah, and that happens. Even if there's something I like, occasionally I've had games where, like, this simply isn't what I thought. And, you know, nice try, guys, thanks. You know, and that's the problem. It's, you know, I'm still playing Elden Ring off and on. It's past the point where the buzz has already died down in that game. Everyone's moved on. And I'm still sitting here going, let me keep plowing through it. This, you know, the speed cycle of running through a game to finish it for review or because the gaming zeitgeist is done and all these people going, I completed it, I'm done. Great. I have other things I need to do. I can't get this done in one, you know, in 2 weeks. Sorry.
And sometimes that's the best time to come to a game is after the hype has died down.
Yes. A lot of my gaming history has been a year after the game's come out and everyone's already given their thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, because you can actually, it feels more pure.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody's going to spoil for anything for you. You're not going to get anybody else's opinion because, you know, God knows that the game had been talked to death for the first like 3 months it was out.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't listen to anything or go on social media or anything without somebody being like, Elden Ring, Elden Ring, Elden Ring, you know.
2 hours later.
That was one of the issues I had with Stranger Things, and I won't spoil anything for Stranger Things, is that they're always shoehorning like this weird love subplot that just didn't seem to fit. And I'm like, why are you just trying to do this? Can we just focus on... And I think some of the other separate plot lines that they had to deal with in that show were they weren't focused as they could be, because it seemed like they were trying to always hook up some characters in some way.
They're trying to hit all of those tropes to make sure that the public stays invested and watches, because as with a lot of media in the United States, you aim for the lowest common denominator. I'm not calling anyone out. I'm not calling anyone stupid or anything like that. Just realize, you know, everyone in America, you're being played because money's the end of the game. And if you feel like you've seen this plot line before, you have.
Speaking of like the lowest common denominator, you want to get into today's game?
Yes, let us talk about this game.
Today we played Altered Beast. Before we get into the breakdown of the game proper, we always go over our personal history with the game, when we first played it, what it was like, and what we thought about it. And my personal history is pretty brief, so I think I'm going to take this one first. So this game came packed in with the Genesis, but for many reasons, which I'll probably touch on a little bit later, it was eventually replaced with Sonic the Hedgehog. And I'm almost positive that we had the Sonic pack in, because I explicitly remember looking at the box of Sonic the Hedgehog and it had that giant not for resale font slapped right on the front of it, completely ruining the box art. So I'm not exactly sure when we got Altered Beast, nor do I really remember playing it. So my real history with the game pretty much begins for when I played it for this episode. So, Phil, when did you first come across Altered Beast?
Well, back in my day. No, actually, my original sort of meeting with Altered Beast, if you would call it that, was going over to a cousin of mine's house. It probably would have been either 89 or 90. I'm going to say 90 just to be safe. This cousin of mine, he is, you know, he's a great guy, but he moved a lot. His mom moved a lot. So when he lived in the area of I was raised, it was there for like a year or two and then they were off again. But he had a Genesis and I was a Nintendo kid. I had an NES sitting at home. I kind of heard the Genesis in like, you know, whispered words and you're on the playground and occasional nearly pornographic advertisements the Genesis had for commercials back then, which I've talked about a little bit before, but if you guys remember the PlayStation era, PS1, PS2 having advertisements, the Genesis didn't care because deregulation said, guess what? We're selling to kids. All the rules are off as long as it's, you know, nothing too terrible. And they were really questionable, super, super questionable. But one of the first games he had was Altered Beast. So I played for a little bit and it's kind of over the years, I only played it for an hour, and I got my ass handed to me a lot, both because I was figuring out a control that I wasn't used to and just how the game is. And it's kind of in the years since it's become one of those white whales of gaming for me. Like, okay, I have to try this out if I can find it. And I really didn't get a chance again until my wife got a Switch and we got the Sega Genesis Mega Pack that you can get on the Switch. Mm-hmm. That has like all of, some of the classic, Sega games. And really kind of, for this episode, retrying it and seeing, okay, now that I have the time, it's on this classic pack. We're sitting down, we're doing this, let's go. And that's kind of my history with it.
So your history was specifically with the Genesis port, not the arcade?
Yes, specifically with the Genesis port. Despite the fact that I am old enough to remember and be in many, many an arcade, we didn't have a copy of that in any of my local arcades.
Yeah, neither did I. I was actually really surprised when I was doing the research for this that it was an arcade, originally an arcade board, but...
Yeah, it's an arcade port. The footage I have seen in the years since of the original arcade, you can obviously tell there's a fidelity difference between the actual cabinet and the Genesis port. But again, since I never played the actual arcade version, I can't speak from that. I can only speak from the Genesis.
Well, that's actually kind of a perfect segue into the development of the game. So Altered Beast is a beat-em-up developed and published by Sega. And as we're just talking about now, it is actually a port of an arcade game that was designed by Mikado Uchida. I have somewhat of a history covering arcade ports on this show. Many of them are of questionable quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we already talked that about how you didn't find this in your local arcade, but I'm sure you have experience playing console ports of arcade games.
Yeah, I mean, most of the NES's early lineup, in a lot of cases, were console ports of arcade games.
Unfortunately,
yeah. And that's where we get the idea of the concept of Nintendo Hard, is because they just ported the game over onto a much less capable system with all of the cheapness and the quarter munching and bullshit left in. So, but they just had to say, oh, you can't feed quarters into your home machine. You get three continues. Enjoy.
Was that something you would... Did you prefer the home console arcade ports to the actual arcade versions themselves?
I mean, it depended. If it was a game that the only way I could get to play it was a console home port, then that was probably going to be it. But if it's one of those things where I went and played it in the arcade, I was definitely going to go for the arcade more mm-hmm. than that. And the funny thing is, when Altered Beast came out, It was what it was. The problem is, it was 88, I believe. The problem is, by the time, a year later, in 89, Capcom came out with Final Fight, which was supposed to technically be their Street Fighter 2, but it wasn't. And already, the graphic fidelity, the animation, the sound chip quality, even on home port, like a year or two later on the SNES, was so far and above Altered Beast. Realistically, the two development studios, were they down the road from each other? Were they maybe like, half a country away? Could you have not gotten on train, gone up the road and seen, things are not going quite as well as we'd hoped. Maybe we need to get a couple new UI programmers or something here. I'm trying not to give away the game here. But,
no, you're okay. You're good.
It just seems like it was eclipsed almost immediately.
So to be fair to this, I mean, this was a launch title for the Genesis in the US. So,
yes.
And I can't speak to the Super Nintendo yet because I honestly don't know anything about it hardware wise. Mm-hmm. I have not gotten that far in the show yet. But as far as an arcade conversion, the port of Altered Beast is incredibly faithful to what was in arcades.
Yes. Yeah. In fairness, that is correct. It was almost a one for one shot.
I think the only other game that I've covered on this show that was as close was probably Contra.
I would agree with you on that one, considering the original arcade port, which I don't know how I managed to actually find and play a little bit of the original arcade port somewhere. I did. But, and again, most of my experience with that port was on the NES.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I will say it is, again, another situation where it's almost a one for one.
Yeah, it's so the arcade cabinet uses, well, maybe I should flip that around. The Sega Genesis actually uses the same hardware that was in the arcade cabinet. It uses the Sega 16 board. Mm-hmm. And so just with that, and knowing that this was a launch game, they probably didn't quite know what they could do with the Genesis, because later on you get some very, very good games. And so
you do.
It's not a matter of the quality of the actual console. It's just a matter of, well, the game, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and no, you're right. And again, I'm not trying to knock the Genesis. It actually did come out with some really amazing stuff. Yes, blast processing is an industry buzzword. It's never a thing that actually occurred. But, hey, they made their money on it. But it still allowed for, much like the Mode 7 graphics on the SNES, it allowed for some really, once they knew how to get in there and mess with the hardware, you've got some really, really great stuff going on. It was just early days with Altered Beast. Mm-hmm.
And to your point about saying how it was unmatched soon after its release, in my opinion, it was already outmatched 10 months prior to its release with Splatterhouse on the PC Engine.
Oh, yes. You make a good point. Yes. Yeah, I think I would say a good point. And people tend to forget Splatterhouse is technically a beat-em-up.
Yeah.
It is listed as a beat-em-up.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I already covered that a long time ago, and I still play it in arcades if I have the chance. I fucking love that game. Mm-hmm. And its controls are actually very similar to Altered Beast.
Yeah, I would agree.
But at least you get, you know, you get weapons and stuff, different weapons that you can pick up. The levels are far more interesting. The enemies are far more interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Everything about Splatterhouse is far more
interesting.
Not to give away thoughts here, but
yeah, no, we'll talk about that. No, I would definitely say that's the case. Now, again, is that a matter of, and maybe I'm certainly it is, simply just not knowing the extent to which you can use your tool sets. As much as also maybe new, I don't know if any of the programmers were really veterans on the original game or even the port, or if they were fairly new and simply didn't know everything they could
do. Well, so Uchida actually came to Sega as a playtester for Afterburner, and he basically pitched the idea of you're playing as this buff dude who gets progressively stronger with every item that you pick up. And eventually he came up. He furthered that idea by watching B horror movies, I guess.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so his initial pitch altered, you could say, a bit after watching those, as he thought, well, after collecting a certain number of collectibles, that the protagonist should be able to transform with the final power up there.
You go from, you know, scrawny guy at the gym, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to the Howling.
Yes, yes.
After two pilot
exactly.
power-ups. So, okay, cool. I mean, I'd be on board for that. That sounds like something that is my jam. So
it sounds great, yeah. And to speak to the development team, which was Team Shinobi, they had just released Shinobi on the Genesis, which...
Yeah, exactly. Another Hallmark classic.
Which, if I'm familiar with, I mean, I think that was the first game that they released for the Genesis. So this probably would have been either the second or third game. So they already kind of knew but this was an arcade port, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm going to assume the rules are different there.
But, you know, in the arcades, Altered Beast was actually doing pretty well, especially here in the United States, despite either one of us coming across it somehow. And Sega decided that Altered Beast would be the pack-in title for the Genesis in 1989. And with Sega taking this kind of move just right out of the gate here, they were basically telling the world that gaming isn't for kids anymore. Like, this is the real deal. This ain't your daddy's Mario game, you know, where
Sega does what Nintendo don't.
16-bit arcade graphics.
Again, you know, some people are probably thinking, like, what the fuck? Like, I never got this with my Genesis. I got Sonic instead. And you're absolutely right. Again, I mentioned Sonic eventually replaced Altered Beast. And I think there's two reasons for this. So I looked up the numbers for the sales for both Altered Beast and Sonic. Lifetime sales for Altered Beast topped out around 1.8 million copies.
I would say at the time isn't bad, but now, like, today, that's awful. Well,
Sonic the Hedgehog sold 1 million copies in the United States alone, and then 2.8 million worldwide by the end of its release of 1991.
Okay, that is a massive difference.
Yes.
that's huge.
And so then, again, by 1992, and with Sonic 2 literally on the horizon, I think at that point you look at those numbers and you're like, yeah, Sega wants the Genesis in households. They want Sonic on your TV. Of course, they're going to pack it in and let Sonic print them money.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, all told, Sonic, just the pack-in with the Genesis, Sonic moved 15 million consoles. While Altered Beast? There are no numbers for Altered Beast because I'm assuming that they are so insignificant that they didn't even bother putting those bundle numbers up there.
Probably buried that one completely. Again, no pun intended, but they probably buried that one.
It would not rise from its grave.
It would not. Now, like I said, I do believe I also have a Sonic pack-in too, but I'm going to say because I'm a beat-em-up fan, my drive to get a Genesis was Streets of Rage 2.
That makes sense.
Which I've talked about before, because I saw the, because I was an impressionable kid too, I saw the commercial for Streets of Rage 2, and again, when I said it is one of the most bizarre semi-pornographic things I've ever seen for a video game advertisement outside of like a BMX XXX or something like this, oh my god. It was about as early 90s as you can get, just coming off that wave of, you know, 80s nostalgia where, you know, for some reason there's a strip club in every movie, and yeah, I don't even know why. It has nothing to do with it, you know. It was bordering on almost that level of weird with middle school kids. And like, we have the FCC needs to be notified here. But, you know, I was in it for the beat-em-ups for Streets of Rage 2, and it just looked so good. It didn't look like anything was on Super Nintendo. I had to have it.
Well, it's interesting, too, because right around that time, because Streets of Rage 2 came out in 92, and games were starting to get a lot of critical reception. At this point, they were inescapable. They were in the zeitgeist. And yes, that's when you get the Senate hearings for Mortal Kombat and Night Trap and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And well, then you filter that in the second reason, I think, why Altered Beast was basically kicked out. I say kicked out, but was the Satanic Panic moral dilemma of the 80s and 90s.
Oh, dude. Like I said, and I've told this story before. Being a kid growing up into geeky things meant you were playing video games, meant you were into heavy metal, and meant you were playing Dungeons and Dragons or something thereof, meant you were doing, you know, you were having fun, but you aren't being what I call the all-American kid. You aren't out there playing football. Even if you were, you still got kind of shunted into this weird little group. And the music you're listening to wasn't, you know, Bruce Springsteen and John Cougar Mellencamp coming off the radio and stuff like that. And, you know, I remember, like I said, I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania. Literally, our local newspaper had a headline that there were people in black robes in a white van going around kidnapping kids and attempting to sacrifice them down by the Lackawanna River. We never saw this, but my grandparents, my own parents, my best friend growing up, his parents were like, okay, keep an eye out for those. You see any vans, get away from them because there's people in black robes in them. We're down by there. People fishing this goddamn river. Yeah. You know, like it's Sunday and, you know, there's no people in black robes. We're more worried about being run over by somebody in an ATV than anything else. And you come and you see the Senate hearings. You see this crazy, crazy, crazy shit that means nothing. It's absolutely insane. You know, even the Church of Satan today goes, look, that was never us. We don't do stuff like this. And, you know, that's, and you come back and things are cyclical. It happened in the 80s. Then it kicked up again in the 90s. Then it started kicking up again around the 2000s with the Grand Theft Auto series. It's like every 10 years, are you out of shit to do?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look, because we live in the United States. And gaming and stuff like that, although it's ubiquitous, it's part of the culture. As you said, it's part of the zeitgeist. It is still considered dangerous. It is still considered mind-altering. It's still considered you know, like every game is that, you know, that old urban legend about Paulus, essentially. And again, who doesn't love a good urban legend? They made a terrible movie about it. But again, it's bullshit. It's all bullshit. Totally made up. But unfortunately, in this case, it affected a lot of things in games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could do a whole episode about the Senate hearings and just Board Hell's Wives and
Jack Thompson.
And Wisconsin's own Herb Cole. Fucking dickhead.
I think I've heard of him. I think I encountered him at some point. Like, not, I didn't walk up to him, obviously, but I've heard of him. So we got, dude, we got Bud Dwyer. He's the one who shot himself
on really?
TV. Yeah, that was us. That was, you know, Filter's, hey, man, nice shot. That's about him.
Yeah, talk about, you know, televising violence.
Mm-hmm.
Ironic.
An elected official.
It's surprising that, especially with the pandemic, when everybody's at home and going stir crazy, that this isn't more of a thing. You still hear about it, but in a different way, in that it's a lot of kind of what you brought up earlier with Silent Hill too. A lot of bored people being like, oh, EA's going woke, or Rockstar's going woke because they're going to have a female protagonist and blah, blah, blah. They have this agenda, and it's just like, no, you're inserting your own beliefs into what you perceive. Like,
yeah, and I'm not going to say this is miraculous. It's not suddenly everyone has agenda. It's just been, it depends on the decade, the agenda in question has changed. It's the flavor of the agenda of the week. Kiss my ass. It's all coming back down to the same things, is that certain people want to control the thoughts of the masses. Anyone who comes in with a different lifestyle, a different idea, a different thought pattern, you get lumped into the out-group because it's, you know, un-American. This happened in the 1950s. Again, hey kids, reach history. This has been over before. You ever heard of the Red Scare? It came back in the 80s as the Satanic Panic.
Mm. Yeah. Luckily for Sega, they had Sonic, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They got lucky. But they were trying to defeat the plumber, and they hit struck gold.
He's just a sassy guy that wakes his finger at you and taps his foot.
And runs fast.
Yeah, and also, you want to talk about weird fandoms.
Oh, God. I'm not doing that one. Sorry. I'll go home now. Thanks.
With that said, the release dates for Altered Beast are unusual. This is something that doesn't really happen on the show that much. The arcade game was released in June of 1988 in Japan. And so I have to assume that the Genesis port was released day and date in August of 1989. I'm just guessing. There's nothing really out there that specifically states that. So, I mean, I guess if all of this development history is correct, I think that would probably be safe to assume.
Yeah, I'm going to have to assume that very likely the, you know, development of the Mega Drive was going on in Japan, and they already knew that they were going to port this. So it was probably being done simultaneously, but they had to wait until the initial wave of the arcade frenzy was over before they did the home release.
Since then, Altered Beast has been ported to the Sega Master System, MS-DOS, Amstrad CPC, MSX, the Nintendo Entertainment System?
I got questions about that.
Yeah.
I believe you, but I do not remember that.
It came to the NES, weirdly enough. Atari ST Amiga PC Engine, which is also kind of strange. The Commodore 64 and the Game Boy Advance. I don't have it on here, but then, of course, it also is on the Nintendo Switch now.
I have to laugh that it came to the NES. I don't know if you got to play or if you remember, there was a game back in the day called Bad Dudes. It's now renamed Bad Dudes versus Dragon Ninja. And of course, at the end of every level, they had a sound chip in the board, and the arcade goes, they would yell, I'm bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had the NES home port after playing the thing, and literally, I think the console port went, oh, wow. And I'm like, what in God's name was that? It was the NES trying to process that sound chip, and it sounded like Satan's asshole. It really was – it was not going to work out. If they tried to put Rise from Your Grave on that thing, oh, we are not having a good day.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up – I'm going to bring that up in when we talk about the soundtrack and the sound. Scores for context, just to wrap this up here. Altered Beast has a 2 out of 5 from the users at Giant Bomb. It has a 40% on Metacritic. It has a 5 out of 10 on GameSpot, a 5.3 out of 10 on IGN, and a 6.6 is the highest score on VG charts. So, not looking too good here. It's been 12 days since my last sale. Why did I set up a merch table here? I don't even have any listeners in Raccoon City. I guess I should be thankful that guy in those really cool sunglasses let me use his house.
Hey!
Oh god, finally! Customers! I was beginning to think everyone in this house was dead or something.
What is this? What are you doing in this place?
Well, I'm just here selling Main Quest merchandise from redbubble.com/people/Main Quest Pod. What are you guys doing out here?
You must be from the Bravo team.
Bravo team? What? No. I'm a podcaster. I'm from the Main
Quest. Just a moment. I found something. What is it?
That's a Resident Evil series themed tote bag. The house on that artwork looks suspiciously familiar, but I've also got pins, stickers, and themed phone cases that you can store in that thing just in case you run out of inventory slots.
You saved my life. I owe you one.
Hey, let's not get dramatic, okay? You don't owe me anything, but if you do feel like supporting the show, all of the funds feed directly back into the podcast so I can keep putting out great content and even more designs. And the best thing about Redbubble is not only are they print on demand, but your quality merch will arrive in no time at all.
He's insane! Whoa! Let me take care of this.
And yeah, as you can see, there's even a selection of shirts for the beefiest of boys like Mr. Redfield over here.
Thank you.
That site again is redbubble.com/people/MainQuestPod, or just visit the link in the show notes. Well, I guess I can pack it up for tonight, but how the hell am I going to get through these locked doors?
Here's a lockpick. It might be handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you.
So let's jump into our current experience playing this for the show. And I always start with the story and plot, and traveling back in time with this episode here, because, well, I mean, I've kind of been in the 90s. We're back in 1989. It's weird in comparison, because some of the games I've been talking about seem to have this very deep, rich, philosophical take on their stories compared to what Altered Beast is. This is back to basics, man. I mean, we're rescuing a princess, take a shot, which is fine. I mean, that's the late 80s is ripe with this shit.
Yeah, we're back to woman as
yeah,
reward.
And I think it's disappointing because this game talks about Zeus, who resurrects your corpse, and you have to go on this adventure to kill God, the God of the underworld, who is Neph? Who the fuck is Neph?
Neph. I read that one, and I went, the God of the underworld again, and Zeus, and you're rescuing Athena, and who? You want to run that by me again a second time, sir? Because I remember somebody by the name of Hades. They made him, he was in a movie. It was an animated movie. I think Disney was involved. He was in that one. And, there's a couple other movies which, might have been, another Hades was in there.
Or even, you know, one of the things that this game is kind of based off of, like the Ray Harryhausen movies, you know, you definitely get a Hades out of there.
Definitely.
It's just the entire plot, and even just the way when we were talking about the development and how Uchida kind of just put these elements together off of things that he was interested in seems very interesting. But then when you put it all together, it comes down to it. Again, you have to just save Athena from Neph. And it just sucks because Athena is a god. Like, why would she ever need rescuing?
Doing from not even the real Hades, who, by the way, in the stories already had Persephone, the daughter of Demeter.
Mm.
He's already got a chick. He doesn't need this. And ain't nobody going to overtake him in his own domain. Neph, it sounds like, you know, Hades, like, you know, half brother was a plumber by the day, you know. It's you know, yeah, I'm Neph. I run my own unclogging business outside of Athens, you know, but trying to get up in the world here, yeah, so I kidnapped a goddess. There's, no
blackmail or any reason why this happens.
I'm gonna delve a little into this, so sorry if I'm jumping the gun. And of course, in the game, what happens is you're dead. Zeus resurrects you, if you look at the myths, he doesn't do that. Zeus isn't really known for bringing people back from death, because death and his brother Hades, that was his domain, it had very, very specific rules about how you do that. To have someone come back, you essentially had to get past all of Tartarus's guardians and somehow let Hades would have to essentially agree to let you go. This is not happening. Zeus just resurrects this guy, and as the gameplay goes on, you get buffer, you collect spirit orbs from killing certain creatures, and you get stronger. All of a sudden, you turn into a werewolf. Now, I love me werewolves. I'm not a big slasher movie guy. I'm not really interested in your Freddy Kruegers or Jasons, but you put in vampires, you put in werewolves, you put in killer aliens, zombies, I'm all for it. I'm going to take a big, gigantic stretch of mythological history here that some of our earliest Western werewolf stories do come from Greece, but it's more like a man turns into a dog. It's not the thing you would see in Dog Soldiers or The Howling or Bad Moon, where it's a 7-foot-tall proto-human with a wolf's head and giant claws, and certainly not the ability to throw fireballs. It's just a man turns into a dog. That's it. That's all we get.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, because my history is very rough. But couldn't you say that goes farther back to Egypt with Anubis?
Yes, you could definitely do that. This is, of course, when I say Greece, it only the vaguest connection to altered beast. This is not the first time that we've had, you know, historically in myth that a human and animal hybrid has come out. As you do know, most of the Egyptian gods, or at least the most famous ones, are animal-headed to some degree. Anubis is the jackal, also a canine. They don't really have a whole lot of wolves in Egypt, but they have jackals and whatnot, so they were able to do that in. A lot of Native American myth has wolf and coyote, but those are in more beneficial roles rather than a form of terror. Even in Egypt, this wasn't meant to be a creature of terror. It was a representative of the gods.
The thing that's really disappointing, too, is that there's no reason as to why you transform. Like, there's no explicit story behind it. It just happened.
And it's not
The manual, I pulled from the manual, the only thing that it states is that it is just, you have the power of the altered beast and you collect spirit orbs. That's it. Like, they didn't even try to get creative with it.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, this technically is a two-player game. You can have a second player with you. It's not like one person's a werewolf and the other person's a werebadger or something like that. You both turn into the same monster. And it's not solid. Every one of the, and I stress when I say this, six stages, you become something different. Stage 2, you get spirit orbs and you turn into the sorriest looking dragon I've ever seen. You look like an iguana with eczema that can fly. It's really not great. And you have electric powers.
Yeah, that confused me.
I believe stage 4, you turn into this golden bear who can barrel roll.
Let's
I know the tiger did something.
Let's talk about this gameplay because we're already getting into it. I'm glad we kind of fleshed out what was happening with the story, because my initial notes for the gameplay here is like, I don't know what the fuck any of this is.
Yeah. Because the background isn't even helpful. It's not even a storytelling device. You can see sort of the Parthenon in the background, your first rise from the dead. You see some Doric and Ionic columns, and then you're in hell. You're in like a cave system. You're in hell. But that's not really
I'm surprised you even put that together, because I was like, oh, this is just generic video game stage.
I'm pretty sure the second stage is. I'm pretty sure the second stage is. I'm stretching. I'm like, I can stretch no further. It's going to tear. That it might be the fabled catacombs that you have to cross before you get into Tartarus. But those were the gates guarded by Cerberus, the three-headed dog. Not the second boss, which looks like something like Boss Fight Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we talk more about the levels here, just to get the basics out of the way, Alter Beast is incredibly simple. A allows you to punch, B is for kicking, and C lets you jump. And in a lot of ways, I felt like this was like the cheapest way of programming a beat 'em up. There's not a lot to it. You know, I kind of reminds me of Splatterhouse, previous episode. You know, I was going to say, one of the things I was going to say is that the gameplay slightly changes when you collect the three orbs and transform, but it doesn't really. I haven't covered a lot of beat 'em ups on this show. It's kind of a genre that I'm not very good at. I enjoy the games, but I'm not very good at them. And so when I talked about like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, and you know how I wasn't the biggest fans of them, I mean, I guess I'm not coming off that bias, because we seem to be landing on a lot of the same opinions here.
Well, I mean, beat 'em ups has been one of my favorite genres, but the problem is it's such a wide genre that you get a lot of nuance. It depends on what you want to do and who the programmers were. You had stuff like, you know, Vendetta and, you know, Crime Stoppers, which was simple. Again, same A is punch, B is kick, C is jump sort of thing. But then you get, like I said, a Streets of Rage game where they added a lot of technical nuance. So there's a lot of combos you can do, a lot of things you can do, chain attacks, et cetera, to defeat the enemy faster. And I sympathize with you. I am not the biggest fan of fighting games. I can enjoy them. I can really enjoy watching someone who plays like a Tekken or a Street Fighter or a Fatal Fury or something like that have a lot of technical mastery and technical nuance, but I'm not good at it, so I don't do it. But that doesn't mean that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not a black mark against the game if it's just something I'm not good at. I'm not good at FPS games. I can enjoy them. I have to like put them on the easiest setting and hope to God I don't get motion sick. That's about all I can get out of it. But as far as a beat 'em up, yeah, Altered Beast is about the simplest and cheapest method they could do, and the gameplay is there are questionable design decisions. Charitably,
yeah, I mean, admittedly, when I was first playing, maybe even into the second stage, I was having a lot of fun, despite how incredibly stiff this game felt, which is something you've got down here in your notes as well.
Stiffer than the course you are.
Because, like, again, coming into this, not having any prior experience with it, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, you begin as this buff naked dude, and then you collect an orb, and you're a slightly beefier man. You collect another one, and you are comically beefy, like Chris Redfield levels of beefy. and then suddenly you are,
at this point you've made the boulder, you're a bitch.
And then suddenly you are just a fireball throwing werewolf.
And again, you know, I can get behind that. That's a cool premise. I would love to see shit like that, but not in this game.
And that's it. Like, that's basically the game. And I just don't feel like there's a lot here. What really kept me entertained are just, and this is kind of a little bit of the graphics, are just the animations. The animations are fucking silly. Like, I could not take this game seriously at all, especially that second stage, when not only do you turn into a dragon, but then there's these little dick dragons that pop out of the ground and like wiggle around. And like,
again, the dick dragon coming back around.
And then like, And then in your human form, like the way you lay on the, when you crouch, you lay on the ground, but then you're, if you press B or whatever, he sticks his leg up like he's doing a ballet kick or something.
Yeah, he turns into the Rockettes. He's kicking up and like, that's what I'm sitting there playing it. And I'm like, oh God, I got a low enemy. I'm assuming if I can crouch down and hit kick, I'll do a low sweep because I've been taught by successive games over the years that crouch and low kick, you get a sweep or a low kick. Instead, he goes flops on his back like a dog and starts flinging his leg up into the air. I'm like, what the fuck was this? What decision is this? How is this going to assist you? And of course, I get hit.
That was just one of my first notes I put in my phone. I was just like, what the fuck is, what are these animations? What is happening?
Yeah. And especially if it's hit by an enemy that sits on your head and just continues to just accrue damage.
One of the notes you have down here is how there aren't any discernible patterns to enemies, really.
Yeah, they're really, the sprite work is, and that's, I think, more a matter of the programming. It's because the animations are choppy, and maybe this is where I'm coming in on that. It would seem like the pattern, there are no patterns to, or nothing you can discern. And a lot of other beat 'em ups, especially in 2.5 plane, you can sort of telegraph and see if something is descending, what they may be going for, unless you get caught by surprise or there's this, you know, thing on the screen that the programmers put in, you kind of know what's going on. On the flat plane that this game plays on, sprites can do like hops and jumps, especially in smaller enemies. They made them very erratic. Human-sized enemies, they just kind of like shuffle into you, like the Living Dead. There's shuffle, 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 and suddenly they smack you and you're missing two health bars all of a sudden. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I just got clocked by a jobber enemy for a lot of health, and I don't have it. And you don't get any health drops or increases in this game. But the worst ones are the smaller sprites or the second stage, the dick dragons. The third stage, there's like these weird praying mantis bipedal, you know, stinger for penis enemies that I don't, a lot of very phallic stuff in this
it's
game.
The male fantasy.
Just warning y'all out there. It is the male fantasy. It's everything as a penis. Freud would be proud. And you're sitting there going, even by stage four, I don't remember, there's something dumb. And I'm like, I don't know if I got the patience for this, quite frankly.
That's the other complaint that I have, is that every enemy is aggroing you. It seems like they have no, how do I say this? They are not existing in the stage. They are just there to be a homing missile.
Yeah, it's almost like they're literally background material until they're not, until they're almost on top of you. Then it becomes a life sprite you can interact with.
So it's not only this incredibly strange AI, these awful hitboxes, in my opinion, which I'll get to in a second. And then the stiff combat. This game is incredibly, incredibly difficult. At least I found it very difficult.
Yeah.
And when I compare
especially when they start adding pits in and then you're falling down them, you know you hit a good jump, and I can't even imagine what this chaos would look like with a second player.
Yeah. And then, like, if I compare it to a game that I played previously, which was TMNT 2, at least in that game, if I wasn't sure what was coming or how a certain enemy was going to attack, at least I could just jump kick my way through it. Mm-hmm. And there's really no way to cheese basic enemies. There are ways to cheese the bosses.
Yes, there are.
But getting through the stage itself, it's pretty fucking difficult. It's mostly trial and error.
Yeah. And you mentioned the jump kick. There's no real forward momentum jump kick in this game. You can throw yourself into the air and make an air attack. But it is straight up, and it's, you know, if an enemy's there, it'll hit it. If not, at the point, you know, most every other beat 'em up has some level of jump kick.
Yeah.
It's, you know, not practical in real life street combat, but it looks good in a video game and gives you a little forward momentum to get, you know, to have a little movement, which when you have all your games on a 2D plane, you need forward movement. You need ability to move. If you can't move up and down, you need the freedom to go back and forth. And this just doesn't offer that very well.
And the other strike that I would put against this game, and I don't know how you feel about this, is just the game's length.
I think this year's Summer Games Done Quick, somebody ran Altered Beast And they did it in like 6.5, maybe 7 minutes. And I sat there and watched it, and I don't remember the drummer's name. I don't remember who they did, but yeah, they did Altered Beast in 6 minutes. I'm like, that's not even time for someone to like get up and go to the can and come back. Yeah, right. Like, let's say, you know, all of a sudden, like they sit down and the next game up on SGDQ is Altered Beast by blah, 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 blah. And you're like, you're sitting in the crowd going, oh, wow, I'm busted for a piss. You go back, you come back. Wasn't that a great session, folks? Yes. And Jesus fucking Christ, I missed the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. In a way, I guess I'm kind of glad that this game is as short as it is. You know, there's only, is it 5 or 6 stages?
I think it's 6. Let me think. Maybe it's 5. Maybe it's 5 because it's like, I think there are only 5 transformations altogether. Yeah, I may be wrong. Maybe
that's
5.
All you get. And I feel like if this game was any longer, you know, when you combine, we talked about the very lackluster gameplay. If this game was any longer, I think I would have just gotten frustrated with it.
Oh, definitely.
If that makes sense.
Now, I can definitely imagine a video game company today wanting to stretch Altered Beast out into a 60-hour, you know, fucking ordeal. I don't think you can get past a half an hour without getting frustrated, let alone anything else. And I say that facetiously, I realize that. But this game is frustration-inducing. There's not a whole lot going for you. You don't get power-ups. You don't get a chance to refill your health. Your transformations, while they can be powerful, if they're not applied correctly, they're for shit. And the second you lose all of your life, you're back to the beginning.
Yeah.
There are no continues. There are no options to restart. There are no checkpoints. You die, back to the
front. I hate to keep bringing up TMNT 2, but that's my basis since I covered it last year.
No, it's okay. Keep
going. Is that was my issue with that game is because it is a port of an arcade game, they decided to add, I think it was like 2 stages to that game. And I'm like, this is way too long. This game was way too long. And so I guess it's a double-edged sword here with Altered Beast because, yeah, it's too short, but also I don't know if I would care if it was longer.
Yeah, and I mean, we all know at this point, every one of us who's played more than a couple games knows when a game has gone on too long and overstayed its welcome, and you're like, God, how is this fucking thing still going on? It's a 10-hour game, feels like it's 20, it's just going on and on. They added all kinds of shit. But we also know on the other end where it's like, I mean, I'm all good for a short story, but this is too short. It doesn't feel like I got value for the money I spent.
Yeah.
Or something went wrong, and this is not, it's not what it needs to be. It's almost an undercooked idea. And I think, again, this is part of, with a lot of sins that Altered Beast commits, and this being the Ghoulcade, sin is part of the game. But again, one of the major sins it commits is it's too short. Now, if it had stayed an arcade port and you just kept pumping quarters in and going, 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 5 stages and you're done would be okay. However, again, there would become beat 'em ups that would come along later that would do that better. X-Men, The Simpsons, Turtles in Time, Golden Axe, Revenge of Death Adder, a lot of those did it better. And it didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome, but it didn't give you much more than really like 7 or 8 stages. This, it just keeps falling short. No matter which way you look at it, it just keeps falling short.
Which is interesting because Golden Axe is a Uchida creation, so
yeah, he figures it out. Enough, yeah, he figures it out. I mean, again, every one of us has created something. Our early works always look like dog shit. Nobody comes out of this. You know, it's very rare that you get a golden boy that comes out of the gate, you know, that hits it out of the park the first try. We all learn. But the problem is those, you know, early attempts stay around and they do kind of put not only your future work in perspective, but they do kind of put the past in a very particular light.
Thank you.
So, since I started us off on the gameplay, I would like to hear your thoughts up top on the graphics. How do you feel Alter Beast looks?
Oh boy. Now, again, I try not to let nostalgia color my view of things. I'm not immune. It just happened.
Yeah, sure.
And I realized that the graphics were part of their time. They could only program so much, especially with both the technical knowledge that they had at the time and the graphics boards that were available back in the 80s. Anything you got in your home PC now has far, far eclipsed them. Just completely outstripped them. But we all know when you have a very good programmer, you can circumvent a lot of hardware handicaps. They didn't do this. Not only is the animation stiff, the characters are very stiff. I feel like in a lot of cases, they tried to have some very inspired designs, but it didn't work. And so the background graphics are, and I will agree with you, even kind of guessing where it's going, they're extremely generic. And if you didn't know anything about mythology, you're not going to be able to go, oh, I can sort of see where they were going. Yeah, yeah. It's like, what is this garbage I'm wandering through? This is completely disconnected. Again, it's a game for time and place. I'm not going to say they're horrible, especially considering it's 88, 89, and like a year or two later, we're good. With newer stuff, it looks a lot more fluid. But it's just, it looks like an extremely terrible stop motion animation movie, where they like let the motions be stopped for too long in between the animation segments, if that makes sense. It plays with the eye too much. It can be a little headache inducing in some cases.
Yeah, and again, when you brought it up, going from, you know, like the Greek Parthenon area or whatever into Hades and stuff, that I never made that connection. And maybe that's probably what they were going for. But to me,
I'm probably sure someone out there is going to tell me, no, you're fucking wrong. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. It's this, that's that. And think, look, pal, I don't really care, whoever you may be, somewhere in the world. I'm just going off of me trying to cobble together some sort of semblance of visual storytelling, because there's not a whole lot of spoken dialogue. There's little, you know, occasionally.
Well, to be fair, there's a lot more spoken dialogue in this game than in any other game previously.
True. By comparison, you're right. Occasionally you'll get a word balloon, and sometimes it gets lost in the background, so the font choices are not that great. You know, and again, you're right. There's a little bit more than grunts and groans going on, but it just feels very, very off in a way I can't place.
On the whole, I think this game looks fine. As far as the Genesis goes, and this is weird because, side note, this is actually the first Genesis episode I'm recording, but there will be others before this airs. As far as the Genesis goes, though, there's something about this that looks very primitive to the other stuff on the Genesis, but even compared to when I talked about the PC engine. NEC was Sega's main competition at this time. It really wasn't Nintendo quite yet. So more or less, Sega was kind of trying to keep up with what they were doing in Japan while, you know, trying to bring that arcade experience to home consoles. So the least I can say is that every level is unique.
Yeah, that is true. Every level at least does have its own unique quality.
The only, I guess, knock against that, again, which could very well tie into the story, is that they're like two of the five levels or whatever are cave levels. They look like you're just generic cave level. And then the next level is just kind of like this generic castle looking stage, which there's probably story reasons now that you mention it. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense in my head.
I mean,
but not knowing that, not having that connection, I was like, these are incredibly bland.
Yeah, I don't remember Hades having a castle, but maybe Neff does. Maybe he saved his plumbing money.
Right. Or, you know, he's making a lot of money capturing princesses and goddesses and stuff like that.
Oh my god, that sounds like the basis for a game itself. Like Princess Capture 2000, something you'd see on Steam these days. Yeah. Ransom princes off to the princesses off to, or maybe princes too, for the highest bidder, you know?
Ransom Simulator coming to Game Pass.
There you go. Ransom Simulator. Oh, there we go. It's Roller Coaster Tycoon and Ransom Simulator in a double package.
Yeah, and I think when you take into consideration the arcade game, which I think is something that you brought up earlier about just the quality and the fidelity of the arcade game, I think with the port on the Genesis, they were obviously... And this goes for other beat 'em ups at the time as well. I mean, TMNT 2 with that apartment building stage. Mm-hmm. The first stage is always going to be the showstopper.
Yes.
Because nobody really expects you to get much farther than that unless you have, you know, a bag full of quarters or you were just some freak of nature in the arcade. Mm-hmm. Or not a freak of nature, but a altered beast, if you will.
You have risen from your grave and gone right to the arcade.
Due to the Sega 16 board, you have those huge sprites. And you compare that with the sprites of the PC engine, because again, that's kind of what Sega was targeting. They look okay, but compared to, again, the arcade game, they're not very detailed. The sprites in the arcade version actually look a lot better. There is an obvious drop in quality to the Genesis port. They almost kind of look like they're vector-based a lot of the time.
They do. And you mentioned that, and I will say a point in fairness for the Genesis port, yes, the sprites are large. You can at least tell what's going on. And again, I remember the TMNT2 like sprites, and they were very small. They were very muddy. You lost a ton of fidelity. At least with the arcade port for the Genesis for Altered Beast, you kind of can see what's going on, but again, fidelity drop is precipitous.
And I think we would probably be punished if we didn't mention the one thing that this game does. And in fact, I don't think I mentioned it in the development history, but it was this specific thing I'm about to mention. The developers spent an entire month on it just by itself. And those are the transformation animations.
Yes, probably realistically the best looking part of the game are these transformation animations. Now,
easily,
they are simple. All it is, it's a flame background with a flashing, like, you know, if you have seizures, do not watch this background warning, but you physically watch in very real time your character turn into his beast form, which is, I think, definitely unmatched for the time it came out. And even realistically, even to this day, not something you often see. Which I could see. I mean, there were some very famous movies of the time with werewolves, of course, The Howling and American Werewolf in London, that had, at least in the cinema, had werewolf transformations that were visceral. It isn't like the old Lon Chaney Jr. where you screen wipe till you're furry. It looks like a visceral, painful, bloody, gory transformation until you're the final beast. And even those, to kind of like, you know, the Stan Winston Studios kind of jerking off on the movie screen here, they really sort of dragged it out. Mm-hmm. With Altered Beast, that kind of influence does occur in the game. Now it's awfully sped up because you're in a beat-em-up, an action game. But you still get this visceral sense that the man transforms to the monster. Which, again, I'm down for. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that. Yeah, that's... And you even look at, you know, in just popular culture, you have Thriller... And there is that very long scene, they really draw it out, where Michael Jackson turns into the werewolf. And yeah, this is very much replicating that kind of experience that you were looking for. So let's jump into the final category here, which is the music and the sound effects. And I'll kick this off. Altered Beast is interesting as far as this era of gaming goes. I don't know if I've covered a game that has had so much digitized voice work as this one does. In fact, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, I think the only one that I covered was Bart versus the Space Mutants.
Yes, you're right.
And that was horrible. That sounded absolutely terrible, just as terrible as the game you mentioned earlier.
Bad Dudes.
I was going to say Bad Boys. Different game.
Different. Yeah, we'll get sued.
But the Genesis, as far as the sound chip goes, they had two different sound chips basically that worked in tandem. They had the Yamaha YM2612 and the Texas Instruments SN76489. So the former was capable of using 6 sound channels, but wasn't able to sample audio. It's kind of one of the Genesis's downfall when you compare it to other stuff like the Super Nintendo, for instance. But instead, that 6th sound channel could be used to modulate signals that were able to imitate a 8-bit sample. So then you combine that chip with the latter, the Texas Instruments one, and developers could pretty much just go nuts using different frequencies and levels that you would normally not be able to use on that Yamaha chip. So with that said, for the time, digitized voices were kind of, well, they were new on consoles. They were definitely not a new thing. They had been a part of the arcade experience for probably almost a decade up to this point.
Yeah, definitely.
But on a console, I mean, this was crazy. I mean, as soon as you pop in a game into the Genesis and you flip that power button on, 9 times out of 10, you are immediately greeted with someone shouting Sega at you, you know?
Sega!
Sega knew what they were doing, and they really just wanted to flex their muscles with Alter Beast, so it seems. So, yeah, I mean, I think along with the really silly animations of these sprites, and you get these digitized voices, it's definitely a novelty. It's corny as fuck. It's definitely a novelty. What are your thoughts on this stuff?
Well, I have to agree with you on it. I think at least for a little while, Sega did have the advantage through sound. They did pretty good. And as time goes on with the manipulation of music and, you know, some amount of voice sampling, they were able to get better. Alter Beast is fairly faithful compared to its arcade port. And again, I say this as someone who's only seen capture footage of arcade on YouTube, not necessarily played it himself. Even, you know, the infamous opening line, or should I say famous, maybe infamous both, you know, the wise from your wave sounds pretty good. Yes, it does sound like someone who has a little bit of a speech issue, but it does sound pretty good compared to a lot of other things, especially for a console about 89. It sounds pretty good. The hits sound a little meaty, so okay, good beat-em-up noise, but there is, unfortunately, that's, as you said, digital noise, that tinny aspect to the background that I don't think had anything to do with CRT monitor volume at the time, because again, don't forget, folks, this is 89. The only TVs we have are CRT TVs. This is not flat screen yet. This is not plasma screen. This is not projection screen. This is not stereo setup sound. Unless you're like that one maniac I talked about one time on my show, and, you know, trying to impress people with the stereo system that he kept annoying his neighbors with. But it's not bad. It's really not bad. It's comparably nice when the alternatives are nothing. When the alternative is, as I said earlier, Satan's asshole. That's about all you've got. Now, is it generic? Yes, I'm sure you can go to any soundtrack that canned fist fight, canned noise you can find. Like, it's literally my first adding sound effects to a thing. I'm sure that something very similar is there by comparison today. Back then, it is definitely, as you said, a novelty and a welcome one.
Yeah, yeah. There's something. There is definitely a signature Genesis sound. And
yeah, absolutely.
I guess I'm going to kind of get into that with the music here, because I kind of have a weird take on the music. For the most part, this isn't it. There are some really, really good soundtracks on the Genesis, and this one is, it's not bad, but when you hear, again, we keep talking about the concept of this game, right? It is a beat 'em up. You are basically an American gladiator that transforms into a werewolf and throws fireballs, and then you beat the shit out of zombies and demons. And then you turn this game on, and the music that accompanies this is slow. It's very quiet. And the songs themselves actually don't really go anywhere. They don't loop. They are actually pretty long songs, but they are just, they don't go any, they just kind of meander. A good song has peaks and valleys, and this is just a flat plane. And I think, so this is where it gets weird for me, because I think the only song that is actually worth a damn, and because of that Genesis sound, that signature sound that the Genesis has, I'm kind of nostalgic for, even though I never heard the song really until I played the game, is the song that plays after you transform. Because that's the only song where I'm just like, fuck yeah, like this is the Sega Genesis. Like this song fucking, this song slaps, man. But otherwise, like, I'm kind of out on the soundtrack. I don't know. How do you feel?
I mean, and again, this is, as a music appreciator, but not someone who actually knows how to make music on any capacity, and it galls me that I can't. I wish I could. This is why I don't talk much about music and soundtracks in my own games, because I'm never really sure if I'm qualified, or in my own show, because I'm never really sure if I'm qualified to really speak on it at length, unless something has absolutely stood out to me.
I mean, to be fair, I don't know if I'm qualified to even talk about video games, period, but...
Yeah, well, neither am I, but, you know, I do it anyway, because what are they going to do? Not listen? Right? They don't already! What are they going to do to me? But, no, it's... You know, and I love a good soundtrack. It's one of these things where I'm not a subtle individual as far as my music choices. I tend to be in one camp or the other. I feel this game would have done better. You're right. It meanders, except for the sound after you transform is really pretty good. This game needed to have either a very sweeping orchestral sound that they, at least what they could produce on the sound chips at the time, that could match sort of the, I think really the scope of what you're supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be going for. Oh, or they really needed a much harder hitting soundtrack. It is a beat 'em up. You need, like, you know, something that's a little like maybe on the, you know, I know that would have been anachronistic, but maybe a little bit more on the techno-y side, a little bit more faster paced, a little bit more, hey, this is some excitement. We're fighting zombies. I'm a werewolf. I'm throwing fireballs. Every time I kick, I fly across the screen with a giant, you know, glowing arrow. I'm blowing shit up. I'm fighting a demon. We got to be doing this here. But if it's just sort of, I'm not really
it's
sure.
It's so subdued, man.
Yeah, it's the wet fart of video game soundtracks. And I'm not really sure what to, it's an audio, are we talking audio, you know, oatmeal without any like toppings? It's audio oatmeal.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison.
It is. The blandest shit ever. It's you're either going to eat it or it's wall paste. It doesn't matter either way. You can eat it, you'll survive on it, but it tastes like shit. I will say a couple of the sound effects. Again, digitized voice has done pretty well. It just seems like some of the noise and sound effects are like a little off for what's going on the screen. Like some of the man sounds like he's trying to, you know, he throws a kick and sounds like he's trying to, like, bench press a 300-pound weight at the gym. Like, you know, like, or something like that. Some of the not even back, and we're missing a lot of background noise. Like, even in the caverns, could we have put, like, a couple, like, maybe drip noises in the background, a subtle manipulation? Mm-hmm. Some of the monsters sort of, like, hip and hop around. It sounds like, you know, either they're pissing down their own leg onto an electric fence, or they're like flipping and plopping in a very, it's almost like, it's unsettling in a way that is not meant to be unsettling. It's just a bad choice.
And just, man, the sound effects that electric dragon makes when you use the electric move Oh my God, it's so fucking bad.
Just put a power drill in my ear at this point. It's just, that's about all.
I mean, I talked about X-Men. It hasn't been recorded yet, but talked about X-Men on just a couple episodes ago, and the Genesis is just capable, not even the good X-Men game. It was the one where you have to reset the Genesis at some point in, like, the middle of the game.
Oh shit, what was that one?
It's just called X-Men.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because I know I played that, because I rented it one time, and I know I played it, and I'm like, this is the X-Men, I don't know what's going on.
The Genesis is both capable of making some very beautiful soundtracks and sound effects, and also very capable of wanting to kill yourself.
Welcome to your doom.
We have finally made it. We are here to summarize our thoughts at this point on the game and find out if we could recommend Altered Beast in 2022. And I think I'll start out here and then you can basically top us off at the end here. So when I came into recording this episode, and even as I was taking notes, I was ready to probably unfairly rip this game apart. Even according to some of those initial notes that I took, I again was genuinely laughing and having a lot of fun just looking and seeing the stuff that was happening on screen, because again, the animations and the digitized voices are incredibly goofy. But when it comes down to it, I mean, this game is just very awkward to play. The controls are very limited. They are stiffer than my neck after I sneeze. The power-ups are, I mean, we didn't really even talk about the bosses or the power-ups themselves, but I found the only time they were actually useful was against the bosses, because otherwise you're just going to be wasting it, using it the length of the level, because there's a very good possibility you could still die and you would have to start over anyway.
Yes.
So that doesn't, and it also doesn't guarantee that one of the fucking dogs that you collect the orbs from doesn't even spawn before the boss. Yep. So, yeah. Again,
what is with these dogs? Is it the golden dogs? Like, I love animals. I don't really want to be kicking dogs to begin with. Now I gotta, you know, fucking turn this golden pooch into a field goal. This is bullshit.
Yeah. Is there some sort of tie to Greek myth where the Greeks were just sacrificing dogs to collect their spirits or something?
Not that I can ever remember, unless it's maybe they really hated dogs. Who knows?
But, to give credit where credit's due, I will give this game the benefit of saying that it is a faithful arcade port. It is probably, at this point, the most faithful arcade port that I've played on the show, so there's that. We kind of bashed the soundtrack and the sound effects, but I mean, it is what it is. It's not the worst, it's not the best, it's just there. It is oatmeal, just plain old oatmeal. I just don't think this is a good game, so I don't think I would recommend Altered Beast in 2022. So, what I would recommend, a game that I would recommend, that again came out nearly a year earlier, was Splatterhouse, which is also previous episodes. You can always go back and listen to that too. Or maybe not. That's like episode 5. It's very early. But it is a much better game. So, Phil, would you recommend Altered Beast in 2022? I just see your one note here.
Why have you placed this one before me? What have I done to anger you so? In all fairness, Altered Beast is an old game. I do feel in some cases, as far as the history of gaming, it is worthy of preservation. It has made a name for itself. I'm not saying I had a horrible time with it. It was just very boring. There are times that, you know, I would just sit there playing and would shake my head and go, this was certainly a decision that somebody made. I don't know who, and I hope they got fired, but it was somebody who made it. But it is largely oatmeal. It controls very poorly. The graphics are certainly of their time. And again, that's not necessarily bad. It just is what it is. It's kind of like the 1980s that spawned it. It was certainly there. It was certainly of its time. It's not always that bad, but it was certainly a series of decisions that were made that led us to today. Take that however you wish. With that being said, how many ways can I say, fuck no, I do not recommend Altered Beast in 2022, unless you are either a preservationist or really drunk. But what I can recommend, if you want to go back that far, is a game that came out a year later, and I've always recommended this before, Final Fight by Capcom, which you can still find. It's in a lot of fighting game collections, I believe. It's still on Capcom Fighting Collection on Steam and a couple other places. The sprites are still big. They're still colorful. The voice work, and it's a very faithful adaptation of the port. I would say if you want to go back in time and play a game of historic importance, that would be your better option. Or Splatterhouse. Or please go play Splatterhouse. Or play that. Or play Final Fight. Play Captain Commando. Play Tiddlywinks. I play something. Play outside. I don't care. Just don't play Altered Beast.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, people have homework now. Splatterhouse and Final Fight.
Yeah, exactly. Just please don't play in traffic. That's all I ask.
So that's going to cover it for today's episode. Once again, man, thank you for coming on and being a guest on Altered Beast today.
Brother, please, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to help you with this one. I just wish that it was a better werewolf game, because we really need better werewolf games. And no, Werewolf the Apocalypse does not count.
I always have to apologize to my guests for being like, yeah, I'm sorry you're on this one. Maybe next time you could be on a better game.
Well, that depends. That's every game is relative, as I've said. And we all know if it's Activision or EA, it's going to suck no matter what.
But what about Tony Hawk?
Well, I'm not even sure Tony Hawk himself has an opinion on Tony Hawk.
At this point, the floor is yours, Phil. Let people know where they can find Deleted Saves.
All right, Deleted Saves comes out every Wednesday morning, 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. So, of course, that will be 9 or 10 a.m. Eastern Central, depending, 7 a.m. Pacific Coast. I can be found on Twitter at Deleted Saves. I can be found at Deleted_Saves_Podcast on Instagram. I don't have a lot of socials. I have joined in a couple Discords. Unfortunately, I'm not very good with Discord, so I don't have one of my own. And of course, you can find Deleted Saves on pretty much anywhere. It's Spotify, Apple, and all the podcatchers out there. I am available. Whatever you preferred, please come by. Please give me a listen. Please give me a like, a review. If you don't like it, you can say fuck you. I'm good to both. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this episode right now, you are very much capable of finding his show. And again, incredibly well-scripted, very eloquent, very, you are one of the best storytellers. I mean, even just a couple weeks ago when we were just chit-chatting, I was just like, I could not stop asking you questions because you were by far one of the most interesting people I've ever, people I've ever talked to.
Yeah, I don't even feel like, I don't think I finished telling you the story about how I almost got shot to death by the Border Patrol. And
no, California. You did not. No, you. Yeah, man. Deleted Saves is a great podcast, and it took me 2 hours to bring this up, but I mean, I feel like everybody brings this up, so I wasn't going to, but it is probably one of the easiest podcasts to binge because each episode's about 5 to 10 minutes long.
It is. I do go for shorter podcasts. It's not nothing against, I'm glad to talk for a couple hours. It's just, I don't think after like 20 minutes, I really have anything more to say. So there I go.
Yeah. I feel like the 10 minute joke has been done to death. So I was like, I'm not even going to mention it, but I will have to at least put that out here because it is.
I think y'all have done like, you know, he does it good, but quick, you know, like that's, you know, sort of, he doesn't last that long, but you get a lot of bang for your buck. And like, I tell my wife all the same jokes and she is just nods quietly.
It's great. It's a really great show, and I think you guys would definitely enjoy it. So yeah, thanks, man, for even taking the time to come on.
Oh, of course. Thank you. I always appreciate it, man.
So next week on the show, the Ghoulcade plows forward if we're going to use snow references, I suppose, with a game that I'm incredibly excited to revisit. This is a game that I actually had a lot of fun playing as a child, though I'm sure it'll be nothing less than agonizing. Find out. It is Haunting, starring Poltergei. That is the title. There's not going to be a Poltergei on the show. That is the actual title of the game, starring Poltergei. I don't know, maybe there'll be a Poltergei on the show. I'm not sure yet. Thanks again, once again, Phil, for coming on. And thank you, listeners, for checking out this episode. And as always, remember to double tap. Ha ha ha!